Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investors Council of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisors of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property finance and money management.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
AFLX.
Yeah.
Starts tonight.
Does it?
Starts tonight. Did you know?
Mate, I'm totally out of the... it's not until they get to the big dance.
Yeah, and that's fair enough, but I thought I'd shout it out only because it's a new format.
Okay.
It's a new format. Yep. Pies and Frio are having a run around in Adelaide.
Is it us?
Yeah.
Versus each other?
Oh, no. What happens is there's
the round
multiple
robin
games.
Yeah. Wow.
So,
lock and load of W for Fremantle, but we digress.
We get to see a couple of these little, you know, young blokes running around, so...
Right.
It's a footy season.
Cricket
is gone.
Our listeners are really excited that we have got the footy banter back. But, mate, we've got a guest today.
We do. Now, very special guest.
Now, I'm interested to know how this guest's going to go for you, Ben, because we'll find out a bit more as this progresses.
Yeah.
But I'll tell the backstory. Before we get there, just a quick reminder to our listeners that we've done a couple of Facebook Lives, Ben.
We have.
And they've worked. We thought, let's just test this out, 15 minutes on the couch, see how it goes. It's going well.
Well, we've got over 1,000 questions, Bryce,
yes,
from our audience.
So it was a meeting of need.
Let's so we've got to get to those questions because we feel like these people are waiting to they're just waiting for their answer.
They have
in
waited.
In terms of what they need
they have
to do.
Waited very patiently. But so what we're doing, for those who haven't listened, Ben, we're doing three questions, 15 minutes on the couch.
Yep.
Once a week, Ivis, maybe twice. No, once a week.
Yep.
And so how do you find out, Ben? Two ways. One, you've got to be on our mailing list.
Yep.
So go and download the Money Smarts on thepropertycouch.com.au and go and like us on Facebook. Simple.
Because we do some lunchtimes and we've done some evening ones as well.
Yep. Okay. And if you can't see it live, you can see it on replay.
Because we've just got to fit it into our busy schedules.
So Facebook Live. All right, Mindset Minute today.
Yes.
Here we go, Ben. This is for you.
Rightio.
Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food.
Mm.
Who said that?
Someone very, very smart, Bryce.
Hippocrates, the father of medicine, right?
There we go.
And it was his belief that eating wholesome food was the basis for good health.
Makes sense.
So,
Did they have sugar back then?
Well, they would have had natural sugar, Ben. They would have picked a berry off the tree.
True.
Rather than all this refined sugar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And here, tell me what you eat and I'll tell you what you are.
Mm.
What do you eat, Ben? No. We won't go there.
Oh, you've got, you know, my three chins and my nice little love handles. Does that give it away?
Mate, no comment. No comment. Other than
there's
a perfect heckle opportunity. But of course, you heard an extra voice in the room. We knew it wasn't Ivis.
Yeah, because we don't hear her voice.
You could hear Emily. But today we've got Emily Hazel with us. She's the founder of Serotonin Eatery, Exercise and Education. Welcome.
Thanks, Bryce.
Thanks for coming on. Ivis, do you know that she's also an interior architect, although studied architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Double degree.
And graphic design.
Yes.
You're a busy girl.
Very.
Hey,
and then there's that big pivot into food.
Yes.
And health and well-being.
So today, Ben, we've got some mindset, we've got some business success, but we've also got a property story here with Emily. But what's really interesting is your backstory. Because it'd be fair to say, for those people who don't live in Melbourne and those people who don't live around Richmond and haven't been to your cafe, it's a cafe that my family frequents because we are on a food journey. But for people who don't know what Serotonin is, can we sort of step back a little bit and work out what it was like for you in your teenage years and how Serotonin became what it is today?
Yeah, so I'd actually always wanted a cafe, even though I went and studied a few other things. But when I was in high school, I was going through what I refer to as mood funks. So for me, it was depression and suicidal thoughts, but it could also be anxiety. I like to say mood funks because they're natural. Everyone's going to have ups and downs. But what I wanted to work out was how to stabilize my mood. So I did a lot of things at school, spoke to counselors, nothing really helped. And I moved out of home at 18. And then when I was 21, I took myself to the local doctor. And after speaking to her for 10 minutes, she'd never met me before, barely asked me a question, she said, "We're going to put you on antidepressants." So I went home that night. Luckily, I was intelligent enough to do my own research, and I found this one peer-reviewed article that really stood out to me. And it was about three ladies in the UK who'd been stuck on them for 30 years. And they were just numb, and they wished they had never taken them and they wanted to get off them. Yeah. And at the same time in my life, I had two friends who were twins. One had gone on them and one hadn't, and you could just see the difference. One was just numb and one really wasn't dealing with it, and the other one started to get fit and healthy and got over it naturally.
Wow.
So I started to research natural happiness, and then after about 3 months, the word serotonin just kept coming up, coming up. And then I worked out that instead of trying to just achieve the ultimate happiness, I really resonated with serotonin because it was about stabilizing your mood. It wasn't going for something, you know, out of your reach. It was just about, every day feeling better naturally.
Because that's often referred to, you know, when people are happy or laughing at a joke, the natural serotonin that's released. So what is it about that sort of led you down the path of naming your cafe serotonin?
So it's nicknamed the happiness hormone. It's a neurotransmitter. So there's a lot of different ways you can naturally increase your serotonin, but possibly even up to 100%. They say 90 to 99%, but that's just because they can't prove it. 99% of serotonin is found in your gut, and then it converts in your brain. So I did a lot of research and I found basic things like spending time in nature, exercising and spending time, you know, in a community all boost your serotonin levels. But the biggest one for me was finding out about the food. So it's all food that's actually high in what's called tryptophan. So it's complex carbohydrates. So sweet potato, brown rice, quinoa, frika, bananas. Any natural sort of foods that are complex.
A couple of them resonated with
you. I was just going to say, that just describes your diet.
And just a couple. There's a few that went through to the keeper.
Quinoa.
Quinoa. I sort of let that one go.
Have you had quinoa before?
Yes, I've had quinoa.
Oh, good.
I have a wife, mate. You know, like, she puts great food on the table. But if it was up to me, if I had to survive on what I would buy myself, I'd be dead.
You might not be here.
Exactly. So,
Well, the reason that this interview came about, Ben, is we've got a mutual connection, Emily and I, in Jana, friend of my wife. And she said, oh, I just interviewed Emily. You've got to chat to her. She's so positive. And obviously there's a property spin to it, which we'll talk about later. But I'd actually been to your cafe, and I've got a younger son. He's on the autism spectrum. So my wife and me, as a result, we're on a mission to heal him through whole food.
Yeah.
Right? And so he had tippy toe walking, hand flapping, only 18 months ago, and some of the stuff that we've been doing. So it's called a GAPS diet. Has allowed us to heal his gut, and he's had enormous growth from that. So I'm a big believer. That what I talked about before, food, let food be thy medicine, medicine be thy food. I'm on board. And but I'm you know, you're a vegan. I'm not. I follow the paleo diet. So Ben, I like meat still.
Yes, that's good.
We say the V word's a naughty word. I follow a plant-based diet.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
It scares everyone off.
Yeah,
they there's think what image, do you eat? But
there's which an one? Image problem with that V word.
Which one? Vegan scares them off or plant-based?
No, any V word. No. Vegetarian, vegan. Yeah. We say they're like swear words, so I would never use those words.
Plant-based diet.
Because of the, you know, we still have burgers and pizzas and pastas and lasagnas and whatever. People think you just live off lettuce leaves if they hear the V word.
Yeah, well, you know, that's the joke that I run with Bryce.
Yeah, he reckons I get excited when the lawnmower fires up. So I'm having a breakfast date with Jack, who's my oldest.
Yes.
And so we'd heard about your cafe and we thought, well, this is great, because when you're a whole food person, you'll drive across town 50 kilometres and it'll take you an hour and a half just to go to this place.
We have a dad and his daughters who come from Berwick every day and Geelong every day. Yeah, they come for lunch.
Because it's niche and you can't... people don't understand who don't have food allergies like my family does. You just can't make a decision to stop off somewhere. You've got to plan where you're going to go. So I thought, well, I'm going to have a date with Jack. I took him to... And I get... You know, you sit in there. It's Japanese inspired. So you sit in these little...
tatami booths.
That's what I was going to say.
Tatami booths.
There's even swings in there, Ben. There's a big park across the road. It's terrific, right?
Perfect.
So I sit there and I look at the menu and I'm thinking, all right, where's the bacon?
Good.
Because I'm thinking more sort of whole food, but including protein. I couldn't find the protein I was after.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just happened to chat to one of your wonderful staff. And
serotonin dealers.
Serotonin dealers. Exactly. You like that?
Well, that is gold. Trademark.
I'm the head serotonin dealer.
Trademark.
Don't you worry.
Trademark.
I'm a businesswoman, it is.
So I was talking to an SD, Ben, serotonin dealer, and she happened to mention to me that there was no meat on the menu. So that was a bit of a surprise to me. So,
but she ran you through the proteins, or the plant-based proteins?
Yeah, and I had a wonderful meal. And like the moral of the story was a good experience.
Did you have first, a serotonin hit?
I did.
Good.
I have a serotonin hit all the time. Yeah. So my wife actually plans for us to have catch-ups with other families that are like us in the park across the road.
Yeah.
So that's the backstory, and that's how we got to this point here, Ben. So this is why I just thought I'd give the backstory.
Well,
to
it's
the...
all part of our theme for February, which is...
Feel Good February.
Feel Good February.
Absolutely. So a couple of things for you. How did you start from this being a passion for you to fix your own health to eventually end up being a business? Talk us through that.
So I discovered that you could change your diet. So I personally changed my diet, made myself an experiment. And as I was feeling better, a few friends around me had noticed and they said, I'm going through this or this. I said, you may as well try it. Just help me. So then I'd seen it happen with a lot of friends. And then I actually got onto a doctor in America, Dr. Wertman, and she has done her PhD on this. So I was speaking with her and she was very excited that I was coming up with this idea. And since I was 16, I'd been working on an idea for a Japanese restaurant.
Mm.
And then I'd done business plans about it and I'd sketched it all out. And then it was actually a friend who said, why don't you do a serotonin restaurant? So I owe him my business. But then I started to do that and I'm quite creative. So the ethos just took on from there. I started brainstorming everything that makes me happy. And I found a colour psychologist. So the outside of the building is one colour.
Mm.
And that it's a dark and it's actually a pearlized sort of porter's paint. And then that represents the outside crazy world. And then you walk into what we call the day spa for your gut.
Mm.
And then it's all mood stabilizing colours. And
I am loving
it. Being exposed to stuff that you haven't been exposed to.
The power of, you know, communication, language, branding. Yeah. All
customers
of those
said that to me. They came up with that. They said it's just like a day spa for your gut. And I was like, that is brilliant.
There we go.
Email straight off to the trademark crew.
Here's another one. Add it to the trademark list. Very good.
So what was it like in the early days when you, you know, you have this idea? It's obviously a personal experience that's worked for you and you want to share that with others. But it's a very big niche that you undertook.
Well, I was living it, so it didn't feel like a niche to me. I know now I look back and I really realise it is. We're selling natural happiness and happy food.
Mm.
But it's just exploded from there. There was already such a big health market, especially I went over to America just before and did a lot of research around California and LA, and the plant-based scene is just huge over there. And that's sort of by trends. You see it will come here over time. Mm. So when I opened, we were the first plant-based restaurant in Melbourne, and now there's about six in the first year or two.
So that surprises me, because I look at the US and I see, I mean, we were there obviously in October, and the food quality.
That's what I knew you were saying.
Well, they don't even have decent supermarkets where you can get fresh produce, let alone, I mean, obviously they've got Whole Foods, which is now owned by Amazon, but the reality is, but it's still obviously a big enough population, so there are those niche
There's
things.
A few like Cafe Gratitude, and they also own Gracias Madre. They have their own farms. You know, they just have land in America is what they have. So they're doing their own farming and using their own produce.
Wow. Well,
what was, remember we were in Dallas and we were trying to find out where Ibis was, and we rang her. And she goes, oh, I'm just in this place, Whole Foods. And so were we. We're three hours away. We ring each other to catch up because she's been looking at the art galleries today. And then we're two hours away.
What did we do before?
Shopping.
Oh, we went shopping.
Shopping.
Yeah,
it's once a year. Once a year for me.
Ben had
I took a bag over there with basically, you know, maybe nothing, four pair of jocks and one T-shirt. And basically bought all my clothes for the year over there. That's how I shot once a year.
And then I was suffering jet lag. But so what was it like in the early days? So you realised that you were the first plant-based restaurant.
Yeah.
Did it take off straight away? What was the early days like?
It took me 9 months to get my building permit. Yep. And this is sort of, that was a nightmare, but it was a blessing in disguise. So the building that I picked, lots of lessons learned, got a heritage overlay and wasn't a hospitality location. So I actually, during my uni course, picked up a business subject in my final semester. I'd had this idea for the cafe. Well, my friend told me the idea. So I thought, I'm going to go with this. And I picked up a business subject. I told the teacher, this is a real idea that I have.
Mm-hmm.
Can we go with it? And he helped me do a little trademark down the bottom so that no one could steal it. And I circled an area of Melbourne that I wanted it to be in. I sort of knew my demographic. I knew what was going on in Melbourne at the time. And I literally drove the streets looking at locations. And I found this location. It was actually a functioning milk bar. But this was sort of, you know, a plan at the moment. So I did my school project on this location. And then I finished uni and I drove past a few months later and there was a lease sign up. So
wow.
I took over the building and put in my planning permit, and then for 9 months it went back and forth, or it just sat there. I don't know what happened in there.
What, council.
What was the hold up? Like,
so I just wanted to move the front door. No, so I'd researched what helps increase boost your serotonin levels. So that's why we're next to the park. I had all these things that needed to be accessible. So it's near a tram stop, train station, freeway exit. It's near the park. I had been looking on Chapel Street, but I couldn't even park to meet the real estate agent. So that's not adding to the serotonin experience. So you can park right out the front, as you know, and it's free parking. So these were all the things. And then I just wanted to move the front door. It was an old milk bar, so it had that corner door, but sunlight boosts your serotonin level. So I wanted to give the maximum amount of seats sunlight, natural sunlight. So I wanted to move the front door. And that took 9 months. They actually said that the wall that I wanted to move it to was a heritage wall. And when I asked the lady to come down and have a look with me, it's a yellow brick wall with aluminium frame windows. And she's saying, no, it's definitely original from 1889. So they weren't even invented till the 60s. So it went back and forth, back and forth. And I probably shouldn't say this out loud, but I went 3 times back to them. The fourth time, I just put back in my first one and they said, okay.
Oh.
So, you know, someone must have left. And
Planners validate their job, don't they? They've got to sit there and try and, you know.
But it was a blessing, so I started to build my social media. I had my own Instagram account, and my goal was to have 10,000 followers before we opened. My dad was very worried. He was helping me with a bit of the build, and he's looking out the window, and he's like, Em, no one is walking past. And I said, we're in Melbourne, you know, it's about hidden alleyways. It's about discovering food. He doesn't even eat any meals out, so he was very, very worried, didn't know what I was doing. So I started building my social media, the Facebook, Instagram, Twitter I was even playing with, and I was just sort of telling my story.
Does Twitter serve your serotonin level? Twitter doesn't really, it's not great.
It's good for journalism, but in Australia, it doesn't really work. No. We like Instagram. Everything's pretty.
Everything's pretty.
So it took 9 months for the building permit. So that allowed me 9 months to build my following. So we opened on a Wednesday. Broadsheet came in on a Thursday. I begged them not to put the article out. I'd never worked a day in hospitality. Mm-hmm. Did I say that before? So I had no idea what we were doing. Luckily, a friend had come down to help me for those first few days. Broadsheet is a, what's the word? It's they have an online presence, but they have hundreds of thousands of followers and they can make or break your business.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So mainly hospitality.
Yeah.
And it's in Melbourne and Sydney. So
remember in North Melbourne, when they opened that restaurant up across the road, Broadsheet came in, gave them a good review, and then bang, the place is packed.
How do we get the coffee couch on Broadsheet?
Maybe turn the business into an eatery.
Yeah, we can do coffee out the front.
We'll provide serotonin shakes for them while they're here.
House-shaped coffee cups, you know. So they put the article out on the Thursday, and then that weekend we had 1,000 people in. And every weekend since, we've had 1,000 people in. And it's 3 years in April.
There we go.
You've had 1,000 people in a weekend in that.
Yep.
You serve them.
Yep.
Wouldn't that have broken you?
That broke me. We went from, you start on 10. Covers. It used to be Urban Spoon back then, and we were on 10 out of 10 when you open, and we dropped straight down to about 4 people saying the wait was long. I was like, yeah, you came with the other 1,000 people that just read about us on Broadsheet. We hadn't even made the meals. This was meant to be our silent opening. We had bloggers there on the Wednesday morning, and I wouldn't feed them. They don't know this. They might listen. I wouldn't feed them because I knew once they photographed this, they were huge bloggers, the food would go out. We hadn't even trialed the food yet, so I let them have coffees. They actually brought snacks out of their own bags, and then I booked them a table the next Wednesday to come back.
So if you had your time over again, as part of the social media that you're doing, you probably would have worked on the food and the menu.
Four of the meals that we had that opening day are still on the menu, and if I take them off, people have said they will come to my house and hunt me down.
So
our pancakes, our nutrition bomb are still there.
So what's the lesson that you're learning here? Because I mean, there's lots of business people that would just dream for that sort of opening
and publicity,
and it's a little bit you've done it a little bit left of center, and you haven't actually gone and studied how to start a business textbook.
I started a business course, which I got 6 months into, and I had to tell them I have to stop. I'm too busy. I'm still allowed to go back and finish
that. You might get an honorary doctor in 5 or 10 years.
Well, they said I can come back and finish it when I need, so it's good. But I don't know if you know Lisa Messenger. She is amazing. She runs the Collective Hub, the magazine. So I heard her speak, and she said she doesn't hire anyone who's worked in a magazine before because magazine sales were going down, and she's going up by 300% a year. So she didn't want to hire anyone that had worked in a magazine. So I thought, well, I'm not going to work in hospitality then. I did have a best friend who's a Channel 9 news reporter now. She was a journalist and I'd studied photography as well. And so we used to go around, we swear, before everyone was food bloggers. And we would go around and we had this book. And in the front, we had everything we liked about the place. And in the back, we had things we didn't like. So why don't people split bills? All those stupid things. Mm. So we did everything we liked in Serotonin and I fixed everything we hated.
Mm.
I hate when you're in a line at a cafe or a restaurant and everyone, you're sitting in a line and everyone can hear your conversation next to you. People are normally going out to have business meetings or conversations, you know, with their partner or their mum or something. So everyone has a little separate corner. So that's what got changed.
And if you don't know who Lisa Mester is, all you need to do is go to a bookstore and she's probably got about five books.
More.
So, like, she's a prolific writer.
It's incredible.
And, yeah, she's got all these different books. And all on mindset and family and harmony and all these different things, her life journey.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, clearly there was no challenges in opening the business. There was a challenge in getting the front door moved.
Yeah.
but have there been any other challenges that you faced? It's, I mean, your story has been one of growth and, you know, fulfillment of what
and
your,
success.
Your vision
is. Yeah.
I think through the business course that I did, I learned what my personal mission was and I learned, you know, what my vision was. So because I knew that, and it's to change minds and lives to prevent unnecessary deaths. You know, I was about to end up dead, but I changed my life and my mind.
Mm.
So I've worked out that this is my goal and I can definitely help other people do this. And when we were opening, we used to open at 6 a.m. till 5 p.m. Now we just open 8 till 3. But I was opening and closing every day. I was at the shop at 5 a.m. and my partner at the time used to have to come and put the alarm on, which gave me 30 seconds to get out because I'd be there at midnight. I just loved it. I'd spend 9 months building it. I would sit there on the tatami booths. I loved it. So I was working huge hours. But and I remember I was so passionate. I was getting up, but I was sitting up like a zombie. I was exhausted because people forget, for 9 months, I've been going through town planning and trades and builds and kitchen and designing.
And constant serotonin.
Lucky I was healthy before.
Exactly.
So after 9 months, I'd been working on the floor. I was doing everything like a mad person. I wish I had a pedometer on because I would have done 50,000 steps a day back and forth.
Yeah.
But I got plantar fasciitis in my feet.
Oh.
So it's a, you know, a marathon sort of injury.
Yes.
But I was doing marathons every day. So my calves and my feet just seized up and I went to get out of bed one day and I couldn't stand up.
Wow.
And a business that I was doing everything for, suddenly I couldn't go to. So I couldn't walk for a week because of that. And I saw my chiro first off and he had no idea what it was. And I went to yoga and I'm hyper flexible and I couldn't touch my toes. And I just, it took me a few weeks to work out even what it was because, you know, at 25, you shouldn't be getting that.
No.
So that was a setback, but even in my business course, I did learn that if the business runs 70% as well without you, you know, you should be working on the business, not in the business. So that was the stuff I needed.
There we go. There's a little light bulb moment. Turn a negative into a positive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting. Marcus Padley brought us at one of the at the property expos. They had the debate, you know, shares versus property, the great, you know, debate that happens in the property share market. Marcus Padley gets up and everyone's going, he's going to go hard on shares. And he did. And it was quite an interesting debate with Andrew Wilson there. It got a little bit heated at one point. But first thing he said, you really want to make super wealth, start a business. And that's the truth.
Yeah.
I mean, ultimately, in terms of building wealth and because you're in control of that and you're going to spend time and effort in that. In terms of what we talk about on the podcast is more about the passive wealth story. So it's probably a good segue in terms of, Emily, how now that you're obviously successful, one would assume it's growing and everything like that. What are you doing personally around your own story? Or is it still focusing on putting that money back into the business?
Well, before I did my university and the business, I actually worked for the bank for four years.
Yep.
So I became friends with the financial planner back then. And that was just sort of in the middle of the global financial crisis. So he said to me, do you have any savings? And luckily I was an avid saver. Since I was about 16, I used to run a nanny agency as well. I've saved $500 a week for 10 years since I was 16 to 26.
Wow.
So he said, do you have any savings? I said, yes. And he said, you know, I was only 19 or something at the time. And he said, well, we're going to invest it. And he, you know, spoke to me and then we ended up that it was going to be 80% aggressive. So we put that in shares. I think there was 40% Australian and then 60% international. And that more than doubled in a few years. So that's how I started the business.
Because hence when you signed a lease and you're paying rent and the doors aren't open, there's no revenue coming in. That got you to that point. Coming back to the $500, the pay yourself first. I mean, who taught you that money trick in terms of to put that money away? Was it your dad?
Was it 500 a week, did you say?
500 a week, yeah.
That's a lot.
I was making 1,118 a fortnight at the bank. So I wasn't living off much, but I was running my nanny agency on the side. So I would get some when the girls went and worked and the boys went and worked. And if I needed extra, I'd just work nights as well. So if I wanted to buy something, I'd work more.
Yeah, yeah. And so living at home at that point?
No,
and then you'd
moved out at
18. So moved out, but still putting that money
away. Moved into a factory with five boys. It had a rock climbing wall. It had a half pipe that we built inside. Rent wasn't too much.
Rent wasn't too much.
Am I guessing Clifton Hill, North Detroit?
No, kind of? I had actually done a deal with a builder and he was about to knock it down. So there was a coffee shop, there was a coffee supplies in front of us. There was curtain makers behind us and we were in the middle in Paran.
Paran, oh wow.
I started working at the bank on Chapel Street.
Yeah, there we go. Fantastic.
But this financial planner that helped me back then, I've now recently just gone back to him again. So we're going to go back into shares a bit.
Yeah.
And we've just gotten into a bit of property.
Which is good. Which we're about to talk about soon. But with the business, the old saying, you do what you love, you don't work a day.
Yeah.
I think that applies to you.
1,000%.
And as the business builds, does that motivate you? Like your mission, and we'll talk about it shortly, is to change minds and promote that health education.
Yeah.
Is that what's driving you, or is the business side of it fire you up as well, or is it a bit of both?
It's actually the creative side. So I'm definitely a designer. I used to move my little logo, which is the molecule for serotonin, about 1 mil every night for 12 months just to make sure it was in the right spot above the serotonin word. So I love the design, designing the meals, designing the interior. We've just taken over the property next door as well. Mm. So now we've launched Utopia Place, which is my event space. Mm. It's actually on the alleyway called Utopia, and Utopia means a place where everything is perfect. So
great.
Felt like it went with serotonin. So we've done an event space there. So for the last 9 months, I was designing and building that again. So the business side I really enjoy, but the design is what inspires me. So everything, it's a whole sensory experience at Serotonin. So I worked with the colour psychologist, smell, touch, feel, and I really played with the molecule and the hexagon.
Which is, and I've heard an interview where you don't describe yourself as an entrepreneur. But
yes.
What you've just spent the last 20 minutes talking about is entrepreneurial.
Entrepreneurial, yes, I guess.
So how do you reconcile that?
Is that like another V word?
You just don't it like is. Some people about? Hate it now.
Oh, yeah, well, it's everywhere.
No.
You know, everyone's an entrepreneur.
Well, so you want to be, you don't want to be an entrepreneur with no equity. That's how we talk about it. Everyone puts entrepreneur in their, Facebook profile.
But an entrepreneur is just a
founder and CEO.
You have to actually come up with something. You can't just jump on, to a business that exists and then you're an entrepreneur.
What's it saying about entrepreneurs? They're the people that jump off the cliff and learn how to build the plane on the way down.
That's exactly me. We opened the doors. I was like, I don't even know how to run surface.
But what's interesting, obviously, I've never met you before. You've got an enormous amount of drive.
Yep.
But you've also, what you were saying, and you're quite open and honest about your story in terms of your level of anxiety and, some suicidal thoughts and so forth. So I'm trying to correlate those because most people who are high performance still have vulnerabilities around themselves.
And the more pressure that comes in.
Correct. But it sounds to me as if you haven't been unsuccessful in a lot of things that you've done. So where did the anxiety come from, or where did the self-doubt in some cases come from? Because most entrepreneurs normally need to back themselves. They normally need to, they have a little bit of fantasized talent in terms of they believe before it comes.
I think it just hit me earlier. I think I was an early bloomer, and I think people in their mid-20s to mid-30s, what do I want to do with my life?
Yeah.
And this is my favorite quote that changed my life that I learned, was that life isn't about finding yourself. Life is about creating yourself. So that's what it was. I didn't know what I wanted to do. They ask you in year 9, what do you want to do in year 12? Because that's going to tell you what you're going to do at university and for the rest of your life. So no.
And you've got a level of maturity that most people that go through that sort of 16 to 22 have no idea.
Yeah.
But they're not.
I told my parents in year 7 I did go to a private school and I said, send me to the local high school. Save that money. I knew. Yeah. I was going to do something else.
But it's a really important point for those millennials who are out there and the young people in the next generation coming through is that, you've obviously, you had a greater sense of awareness. Did you travel a lot overseas or anything as a kid?
Yep. Normally, not as a kid, but after 18,
Okay. So because a lot of you know, I love the human element of life and what have you. And so I was fortunate. I travelled a lot as a, you know, young teenager and so forth. So a lot of Asia, and so a lot of poverty, yep. a lot of, you know, just stuff that just gives you an appreciation for that. And it matures you a lot. You know, I see some of these kids coming through now and with Instagram and all of that and all of these dopamine hits that they're trying to get and the crap that they're putting out on social. It's like, because, you know, that's their shop front.
Yeah.
For God's sake, pull away from that crap. And just basically focus on maturity and a level of understanding and or define who you are.
I was probably lucky I didn't have social media. You know, it was just coming in.
Yeah.
We always say we grew up in the best time. We didn't, as kids, there was no internet. There was no social media. We played outside, you know.
I grew
up in the country.
Yeah, well, I'm a little bit older than you. Quite a lot older than you. So, but that is the story. And I think, but you've also used food as combining that to get a better inner self. And, you know, from the gut up or whatever it's been. And, yeah, it's very impressive.
Am I inspiring you? You're going to eat better?
Well,
oh, good question. Sure. Let's linger here.
Are we going to eat better? I'll do my best.
I do think that you're a little bit biased over that side of the city. We're in North Melbourne here.
Yep.
Yeah, there's train stations and trams, and I can find a park.
I think Essendon is my next one.
I need to be able to walk from North
Melbourne. No, Essendon's perfect. I'm in Moonee Ponds. I'm literally.
Moonee Ponds, great. Right. Essendon, because I get people every day that drive from there as well.
Street.
They beg me.
Up at Pubble Street.
Yeah, I'm doing
outside of my own agenda, I think that'll be a good spot for me to go.
That's all right. And then the Uber Eats is even easier for me. I might even go and pick it up.
I still think North Melbourne's a good place for you. Hey, so let's pivot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so to the property story.
Yep.
When we chatted a couple of weeks ago, I was really excited by where you've taken this. So what have you done and how have you incorporated that into the overall?
One good property drop-in to say is that we opened in April 2015, and before that, I think the highest house price in Burnley, the suburb we're in, had been about $850,000, $900,000, and then one sold for $1.3 million a month after we opened. And at the auction, he's saying, and the new cafe, and the new gym that we put in there. So we put up house prices in Burnley.
So are you taking gentrification from every house owner in Burnley?
Human interest, human behavior.
Well, the owners do. They have a tab, so.
There it is.
Peter Kaluzos would be happy with that. That's old gentrification story.
Correct. Yeah. Well, build it and they will come.
Yeah.
Like, if you bring that attraction piece and people, we talk about this constantly in terms of if it's, because it is a status thing. If I'm going to a great restaurant and everyone's buzzing up about it and all that, and all of a sudden it's the in thing, you've made it chic in terms of people want to be a part of that. And those people are normally professional, mature.
Yeah.
People are looking to improve themselves. They normally earn higher incomes. And when they earn those higher incomes, they put the pressure on property prop. Bang.
Yeah.
There you go.
A friend did it in Burleigh Heads. He bought a house knowing, and then he opened up a really cool cafe around the corner. Bang, his house price went up and he got out.
There we go.
And then he got out. He got out.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably, you know.
He wasn't passionate. Point. He wasn't changing minds and lives. He was investing.
He was interested in the return. Fair enough.
So Emily, let's talk to the listeners about you know, your take on property, Airbnb, and how you've tied that into your business.
So I've been doing the business course before, and then I travel a lot for business. And when I travel, eating a plant-based diet and living the plant-based lifestyle, going to Airbnbs, I struggle with. And this isn't something, you know, just it's a niche, but going to a place, you know, my own apartment is plant-based, so there's no meat in the fridge, there's no dairy in the fridge, and when I go to these Airbnbs, there is.
Mm.
And seeing how big the market is for my business, and Australia is actually, the word vegan is Googled the most in Australia out of anywhere in the world, and it went up 300% last year.
Wow.
Mm. So we're doing vegan happiness Airbnbs. So a couple in Melbourne.
They're not plant-based?
Plant-based.
Yeah, but you've called it the V word.
I know we're being naughty.
That's a market.
Because it's a better return on investment. It's okay.
It's all right.
It's okay.
So at the Airbnbs, you get serotonin Uber delivered to your house, Uber Eats in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then we make everything we make at the shop, we make in-house. So you get muesli and you've got homemade almond milk and all those sorts of things in the fridge. And these are, you know, no one's doing anything like this, and it is a huge market.
It's a terrific idea, and I got to say, Ben, when I'm I have to travel for my role, and Ben does too. That's when they ask what airline do you want to go on, I go for the airline in which city that has the food that's available for me at the airport.
Not that's my next goal, to get into airlines, hospitals.
Oh, just get into airports. That's legitimate. When they ask me if I want to fly out of Brisbane, it's, you know, if it's this airline, it's because I need to be near that food. So I think that when I go to Sydney, I want to stay closest to where I can get the food options for me. It's a driver, and it's a niche. So I think that that's what pricked my attention when you started talking about it, because I think it'll I think it'll serve really well.
So the Airbnb, you said with a couple? Yep. Is that some? So it's a partnership that you formed?
No. Or no? At the moment, it's all me.
Okay, yes. So you're doing
so that. These are ones that I've purchased with Serotonin.
Okay, great. Yep,
me and
so it's through the company as opposed to you personally in your own name.
Yeah.
Okay, right, yeah.
And then what we're doing in the future, I'm speaking to a lot of people at the moment now. There's a lot of big plant-based Facebook groups. So people whose houses are already like this, we're going to do joint ventures with.
Oh, excellent. That's interesting. Because obviously the Airbnb story is usually about, you know, for those of you who are interested in the idea of Airbnb, you would normally get a higher rental yield, but you obviously get more wear and tear. If you've got a really good property in a really good location, they're in and out.
Yeah.
They've got their suitcases and a few other things. So it gets a bit more...
I've actually just had a brainwave of where it came from. I forgot this myself, but you've triggered me. This actually came from an article I read. Yes, exclusive to me. So it was, I read the article in Melbourne, there's a Star Wars Airbnb. And I thought that is brilliant because there's a million Airbnbs now. You know, if you look where mine are, it's flooded. So it's a marketing thing as well, but it's hitting a niche of people that need it.
Correct.
So these happiness Airbnbs, it makes it stand out.
So someone comes to your Airbnb, is all of this happening by default or do they have to still tick a box?
All by default. There's a few things you can add on, like we've got masseurs that come to your home and things like that. That adds your serotonin levels. But everything, the fridge comes stocked. You can pick what you want to be delivered, but that's all organised through the venue as well.
Wow, there you go, Ben.
That's phenomenal. That's very clever.
I mean, that's good. I could bring people in who want a health weekend. You could be from Melbourne. You can just stay and, you know, get a massage and eat the food.
A detox.
Yeah.
Yeah, like a
detox Airbnb.
Detox Airbnb.
So is it kicked off or is it still in the...
Kicked off. So there's one in Collingwood now and there's one in Paran.
Okay.
Yeah, and sleeps six and sleeps two.
And how? And what's the expansion for that? You want to add to the property portfolio through this particular model?
Yep. So... huge exclusive.
Oh,
we're exclusive. Looking at, I get emails, PMs, everything every day. People want me to do a serotonin in Byron. It sort of goes with the lifestyle and people when they're in the Melbourne one, they say it feels like Byron Bay in here.
Yeah.
So, and Airbnbs in Byron are, you know, everywhere, but there's nothing that's this caliber. So that would be the next one because we kind of need to have one of the restaurants near it. We can send things up there, like we can transport the almond milk, we can make things, and we can have people in the areas and have commercial kitchens.
But logistically, it's far more sensible to do that.
We don't think we don't know what's going on here. That's a tax-deductible trip.
You can come.
Well, I'd love to come to your Airbnb in Byron. It sounds like it's got terrific food. Couple of things. You've got a couple of key messages, I think, for a couple of demographics. Those people who are listening who are suffering from... that mental related illnesses that you had when they were when you're in your teenage years.
Yeah.
And also successful woman in business. So if we touch on the first one, for someone who is listening to this, who is struggling with some of those things that you're struggling with, what's, you know, clearly, you know, the last 30 minutes or so will help them, but what's your key message to those people to help them get out of that mood funk?
What I started to research after that doctor's appointment, and then I started to research natural happiness. I started to write the serotonin formula. So these are now things that I just do every single day. I don't even have to think about them anymore, and they're basic things. And when I say them out loud, people look at me like I'm crazy, but I know you don't do them. So sleeping 8 hours a night. You do?
Since about September last year, I worked out that was going to make a difference to my own health.
Yep.
I'll catch up when I'm dead.
Because I didn't used to do it either, and then I would get sick. Just before I went to the doctor, I'd had tonsillitis 7 times in that year and been on antibiotics every time. So that's just not getting enough sleep. And now that I get enough sleep, I wake up refreshed and I make good meal choices. I exercise in the morning. But if you're waking up exhausted, the last thing you want to do is get up and go for a bike ride. So sleeping.
So Ben, how are you going with that?
Is this like an intervention?
I'm sort of saying I didn't realize how good that was going to be. But
Stopping the stimulant cycle is a
good we're on board
one.
With that.
Yep. So most Australians are stuck on the stimulant cycle. So we get up, we have coffee, and then that drops off, and you actually go past productivity. People think I'll have a coffee before work. You shoot up so far past productivity that you're not even proactive. So.
Yes, I've got one tip.
Yeah,
got
walking around the circle.
Don't do coffee.
We love the smell, hate the taste, so that's an easy
really?
One for us.
That's great. Well, we have caffeine-free lattes, so the turmeric latte that everyone has, but then we make peanut butter lattes, gingerbread lattes, because people still want that social element of going out.
Yeah.
And then at 3 o'clock, people have a sugar hit, especially, you know, in offices, there'll be those chocolate boxes in the lunchrooms and horrible. And then at nighttime, you know, cigarettes, smoking, alcohol, whatever your drug is at nighttime. And then by the time you go to sleep, after having this going on all day in your body, you're not going to sleep very well. And then you get up and you need coffee again. So avoiding the stimulant cycle was the biggest thing that I did about 7 years ago that changed everything for me and just, you know, stabilized my energy.
Yeah. So are you a non-drinker, non-alcohol, or you drink alcohol?
You know, 3 times a year I okay. might have it. I wouldn't be crazy about it. Yeah.
But it's not a regular thing.
Never, I don't really enjoy it with dinner. And
it's a tax on tomorrow's happiness, Ben.
It exactly is.
Very good.
Another one of my favourite quotes. Steals happiness from tomorrow.
Nothing good ever comes from it.
Meditation? I don't know. Do you meditate?
Yes.
I feel like you're going to do all 12.
You do gratitude and all of that type of stuff. I take a moment.
Yep.
I wouldn't call it meditation. Take a moment.
In the toilet.
Sometimes.
It is, yeah, even just 5 minutes. It's the biggest game changer. There's an amazing teacher in Melbourne, Laura Poole, who I couldn't recommend higher. And she taught me Vedic meditation. And once you learn, you can go back to her as many times as you want to relearn. And it's like a whole community, which is another one of the steps, you know, spending time in a community. So meditation is huge for me because that leads on to mindfulness, gratitude, compassion.
Correct. Yeah. Do you want to go through all 12?
I don't know. I'll put them on the website. How's that? Serotonin, yeah,
so,
Sheila.
So if you go to...
Sounds good.
Put them on the show notes and we'll have them on Facebook everywhere.
So yeah, so this is... I run an education program every Thursday night with Year 9 girls because this is where my journey started and there was no information out there. So they come in and I've got a little spreadsheet that has all of these over a week and they track their happiness and doing them and... They're very easy things to incorporate into your day, spending time outdoors. So that's why I put serotonin across from a park.
So what's your me time? Because you're obviously very busy.
Yes.
Do you have any me time, alone time?
We're closed Monday, Tuesday, and that's something someone told me to do from the start.
Yeah.
One, for selling a business. I said it's better to sell a 5-day business, but two, they said you were crazy. So Sundays, I normally drive off into the country camping. Yeah. I've got a van, just go away. So spending time outdoors, cycling, you know,
are you bush or beach?
Oh, I'm pretty much both. Okay. I grew up near Mansfield.
Yeah.
And I go down, I've got a lot of friends down in Torquay, but they all own co-working spaces and things. So I just love working. I go away and I go for breakfast at a cafe and then I sit there for 8 hours and work on my day off.
Yeah, see, it happens to all of us.
It's funny you say that though, because we were at the, we had our staff conference last week and we had a speaker in and we were chatting about work-life balance. And Ben actually doesn't feel like he works at all. And and the amount of hours that he puts in a day is well above average.
Yeah.
But the thing was, when you asked him, is do you feel like you got work-life balance? And he's gone, yeah, absolutely. Didn't skip a beat and didn't feel awkward or uncomfortable about that. So it's, for you, you actually draw serotonin from working on these ideas and fulfilling your
and I can't come up with the ideas unless I take time off. And that was something 9 months after I'd opened the business, I'd run out of ideas and I didn't know where I was going next. And I'm a avid goal setter. Every 3 months I set goals and I hadn't for that 9 months. And I just didn't know what I was going next and I was lacking motivation. So I stopped. Well, the plantar fasciitis stopped me in my tracks. But then I went and did a yoga retreat. And I remember coming back and I was saying to people, every cell in my body has changed. I hadn't stopped. I'd been working. How many hours are there in a week? Because I was doing that many, you know, it had just been going and going. Mm-hmm. And then ideas kept coming to me. I changed the menu. We did a little renovation and things started happening.
Yeah. Mm. So, but, you know, we talk about goal setting, planning, becoming, But so back on that point, because I think it's a really important point, you're changing people's lives.
Yeah.
You know, and for us in terms of what we do in our business, I feel the same way.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, you know, we're passionate about money management and we're passionate about investing. So taking that surplus and basically making it so it's prolonged gratification, you know, so it's long-term gratification that we're trying to do as opposed to short-term, you know, decisions around money, we're trying to change that. So, you know, our belief system is based on a fundamental principle that we want to change people's behaviour around money. Because if people can basically take that sort of long-term play, and property is the vehicle in which we do that. And so, it doesn't feel like work at all because there's a purpose. There's a real purpose and fulfillment in what we do.
One of my friends saw my date of birth this week and he said, you're 25 years younger than me. And I said, well, if you had those 25 years over, what would you do differently? Yeah. And he said, I would have bought a house. He said, even if I went in with 2 people, 5 people, you can't make money as fast as property goes up. He said, I wish I bought a house because he has 2 kids now and he is still renting.
Yeah.
So he said, if something I could go back and do, it would be that. So,
And I'm sure he will have a look at some of that spending pattern through that time period.
Oh.
And I'm sure there'd be a bit of discretionary stuff in there that he would have said, really? Like, did I need that? I mean, take for example, alcohol or, you know, whatever it is, whatever your vices are, if you just strip that out, the coffees, the alcohol and so forth,
yeah,
there's tens of thousands of dollars there over a life's journey. And if that money was invested, what about the compounding interest on that?
That was why I stopped drinking coffee, because a friend smoked cigarettes and I was trying to get him to stop. And I said, if you calculate it, and they're so expensive now, I think this was about 10 years ago, he was spending about $8,000 a year. And then I was like, oh God, what do I spend money on like that coffee? So yeah.
I have a bit of a joke about that. I always say, for those of you who are smoking, keep smoking, because you're keeping the price of fuel down. Because there's excise on that and there's excise on fuel. So the government will take it in. It's a bit of a joke. Of course, I'm not real about that, but it's, yeah, because it's a stupid habit. Mm. It's silly.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, we don't need it.
And also just the message for women to back themselves and for success in business. What if someone is listening here and they're thinking, hey, look, you know, I resonate with some of the stuff Emily's saying, but I'm just a bit nervous about, you know, going through 9 months at council to change a door and, you know, backing myself
resilience.
To, you know, not get the blogger to write and then 1,000 come next week. What messages would you say to women who are trying to create a successful business right now?
So I did my business plan. I did this 12-week, pretty in-depth business plan, and I was doing it as part of uni, so I had a lot of feedback on it. So you definitely have to do a business plan. People jump in, and especially, you know, you can do anything sort of from the internet now. So you have to do a business plan, and you have to do your research. I sat outside the Serotonin location for 5 mornings and 5 afternoons in my car and counted how many people walked through, which is not a good example because not many did, and I still did it.
But you're learning.
But I was learning, exactly, and I was even thinking. Doing that made, you know, I realized how passionate I was. So you have to have a plan. You can't just go into it blind. And then doing the business course that I did in Sydney was pivotal as well. It just changed the whole psychology of how I thought, learning what my mission, vision and values were about Serotonin. I was never going to stop. I was going to break through brick walls until I got there. So if you're passionate, you'll get there.
Mm. But they are completely relatable to your personal household.
Yeah.
100%. What did you just say? Plan to become what you plan to become and do your research.
Mm.
That's our podcast.
Mm.
You know, if you go back through the 150-odd episodes we've done, it's like you got to have a plan and you got to do your research. And we help, you know, educate
and ask
around
three people, you know. Yeah. People think they've got a good idea. I just say ask three people.
So how many mentors, how many advisors, you know, I'm assuming you've got a great accountant. I'm assuming you've got some good business coaching or people that you can relate to.
Yeah.
Like, do you have an advisory board or anything like that?
Not an advisory board. So I did this business course and I met incredible people through there, like Andrew Morello.
Yeah.
So he's now a personal friend. So I've got all these people that I can call on. And from that, I started a thing called Her Story.
Yeah.
So history, his story was about the past. We say her story is about the future.
Oh, got a good marketing.
The girl's eyes light
I'm
still thinking back to Serotonin dealer. Like that's you've got some good naming there. Your language is
this
great.
Is what, and you need to take time off. This is the biggest thing.
Correct.
But so we started this group, and we just started. There was 4 of us, and then every week we doubled, and then we had to cap it at a point. So, but just having those people, and we were meeting every second week, and you bring like a rose and a thorn, a win and a loss, because I own the business and it's me only. So, you know, I have my best day and I just, you know, there's no one to celebrate with. So we did this so that we could celebrate the wins together.
Yeah.
And then we all bring a problem, sometimes a few problems, and then we work through that together. So that's the biggest thing. And then we run nights in Utopia where we have speakers in. And
but when you're making a big decision, like say Byron as an example, are you going to, with your business advisors or your accountants and looking at that? Or no, you're sort of like, that's my goal, I'll just work it out on the way.
It was, again, Lisa Messenger, you know, she taught me to go from my gut. Everything I've done, a lot of people said no. So I do a lot of research.
Yeah.
But the final decision is based on gut. So I speak.
But it's still planning and you're still goal setting.
Yeah.
But
and I do the costings, you know, I love numbers. And,
Well, that was going to be my last question, Ben, was around the detail, because you've got a lot of right brain thinking and you like to be creative.
Yep.
But you have to keep the lights on, you have to pay the bills, you have to make sure there's a profit to make sure it's worthwhile. Do you like to sort of get absorbed in those numbers? Or as Ben said, is there someone, key advisor who runs a ruler over it?
My personality is exactly half mum and dad. So mum is a midwife, she's very nurturing.
Mm.
Dad is entrepreneur, cutthroat, D-type personality, property developer. So I felt like I'm perfectly both of them. I've got the business side, but I own a happiness centre. So I'm helping people and I'm doing it, but I know how to do the business side, which is really good. And that's, I could never ever market something unethical. There were these horrible health trends coming out that were making people unhealthy.
Mm.
And it just hit me to my gut. But I just knew what I was doing, especially through the business. I was never doing anything different. We're just selling fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. You know, no one could ever come back at me, and it was never a trend, and it was never a diet, and it was never anything new.
Yeah. So does your dad sort of get involved? Does he ask any questions, or is he sort of leading
you? He helped me do a bit of the build at the start.
Yeah, yeah.
But as the day before opening day, he said, when the key breaks off in the door and the toilet explodes, don't call me.
Good luck, honey.
No, he's very busy. He's a property developer, so he's done 300 developments from South Yarra down to Brighton in the last 30 years and had a business with his brothers. So he's still very busy doing more developments at the moment, but he'll be there, and my brother is the carpenters, and everyone is...
Okay, oh, well, you've
got a network going on.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So did Mum and Dad come for breakfast at Serotonin?
No, they have Weet-Bix at home. They don't get it at all. They're the people.
How many ticks does Mum and Dad get on yours?
Yeah, exactly. Not many. I'm still teaching them. I've got to lead by example.
Can't be a prophet in your own village. That's how it works. So, that's terrific, Ben.
Yeah, I think, brilliant.
A little bit left of centre for the property couch, but I thought there was some real key messages around Feel Good February, around mindset, around success, around
success
backing
yourself.
Success
leaves clues. Mm. You're obviously on a fantastic journey, and I can see the business exploding into so many different areas.
Yeah.
I mean, when you talk about human beings and wellness and everything to do with that, I mean, you know, you're already exploring Airbnb. You're looking at, you know, you're putting the fitness piece in there as well. So it's everything to do with activity.
Even the education is huge. That's why I did the eatery exercise education. You can eat, but you need to exercise. And then you have to keep learning because you yourself are different, especially in Australia. We came from everyone all over the world. Yeah. You know, we've all got different diets we need to follow.
Mm.
So you need the education part.
So hot tip for you, North Melbourne's a good location. So,
but I'm about happy with Essendon or Mooney Ponds for that matter.
If she opens it, will you go there?
Too right.
Yeah,
I'll be one of her biggest fans.
All right.
I'm already starting to be one of her biggest fans. I mean, you know, success leaves
I said
clues.
To Ben this morning, we're going to talk to this person. She's into Whole Foods, and he just had this look on his face.
That is not true.
This is one thing Dad kept saying to Dad. I kept bringing Dad in during the building stage, and I kept saying, do you feel comfortable in here? I am selling quite hippie food, but I'm selling it in a very normal environment. And that, I think, is where I was good at the business part. I'm selling, you know, there is a lot around Australia of food, of cafes that sell what I'm selling, but they've got raggedy chairs, and people don't feel comfortable in there, and people don't want to sit and co-work and have meetings and things like that.
But interesting that you took your older dad demographic in there, as opposed to, would you have pictured him as the perfect demographic? Or
I knew my demographic was coming,
because
they were on social media, but, you know, we're right in Richmond, we're near Cremorne, there's a lot of offices, we're at the bottom of Toorak. I wanted them to still feel comfortable in there. Yeah. If it was mismatched chairs, they wouldn't even have come in the front door.
Yeah, fair point.
Very good. Who is the ideal demographic? Who's the perfect customer for you in that business? Or is it too broad?
Well, that's the worst thing to say as a business owner. It's not too broad. You've got to know your customer.
Well, anyone who's got a pulse wants to eat good food.
Exactly. And everyone wants to change their mind and their life. But having cafes in Melbourne, you've got to be, you know, helpful to the young mums, because they're the people that are at home with the kids trying to find something to do. So we get a lot of mums on the weekdays, but then on the weekends it's families. Mm. Sunday mornings we're really family friendly. I used to run a nanny agency, so we know we've got the kids box there, and we've got the dog friendly courtyard and things like that. So I've got 7 different seating areas, so you can have a different experience each day.
Well, we're your demographic. We're a Whole Foods family, and the fact that you've got the park across the road is just the number one tick.
They moved the kids' playground as I was building from the other end to my end. They laid a new road for me as I was building.
There's too many things stacking up. Yeah. Burnley property prices went up.
Utopia.
Utopia Lane was behind. They moved the playground. So this is not cash for comment. It's just...
no. Well, we haven't even eaten it.
I'm just going to declare that I've eaten a lot, so...
fan.
I am a genuine fan. So, hey, thanks for coming on. We do what's called a life hack at this point. Where it's something that I've got to try. So it's becoming more and more difficult to keep coming up with these life hacks, but that's all right, Ben. I'm just in continual improvement.
Well, are you that person.
Is your life hack getting off the stimulus cycle? Is that would that be your biggest life hack?
Getting off the stimulant cycle, but also that life isn't about finding yourself, it's about creating yourself. Mm. So this was all my friends were going to South America to find themselves, and I'm thinking, you're not in South America. So I made a decision that this is who I wanted to be.
If someone tells me they're going to India to find themselves one more time, like, you know what? It's right here.
Exactly,
you're
it's
inside.
Right here.
You don't need to go off to some spiritual wonderland to find it, is it?
Well, there were these posters that people were making that said London, New York, Sydney. I don't know if you remember, about 10 years ago, they were in every house in Melbourne.
Yeah.
So I made one and I put my name at the top, and then I put everything I wanted to be under there. And now I sort of learned that I sort of manifested that into reality.
So that Julia Roberts movie that they call it's here.
Mm.
You know, maybe you need to go away to get yourself out of your comfort zone.
Yep.
I don't disagree with
that.
Yeah,
you travel. You've got to have those experiences. Correct. But yeah, if you want to just decide who you want to be and then be that.
Yeah, love it. Great message.
Because you don't
best find, life hack I've ever heard on this podcast. Just
mate, I'll take that. I'm happy to take that. I'll take that. Hey, so my life hack, I actually might leave mine until next week.
He's got to return serve. Keep going. No,
I'm going to return serve on you next week. I've got a life hack here, but I'll do mine next week because that one was brilliant. Well,
as you said, you're struggling to find new ones.
I know. All right.
Come on, give it to us.
My life hack is because we're open plan in this business, so mm-hmm. we don't sort of have corner offices and we're not separated from our team. But the beauty of that is we feel like we're a connected work group. But the downside is that people like to have a chat and they like to have a chat about stuff that's really important to them, but not so important to you in that moment. Yep. So I think that Steve Jobs is. has done so many wonderful things, but for me, the simple thing that he's done is the old
the
earphone, because it's the human do not disturb bit.
Yeah, it is.
Because, you know, the team would testify to the fact that I'm always got my headphones in, so that they
there's
know.
There's nothing playing, you just don't want to speak. Yeah.
Well, 80% of the time there's something playing, but even the 20%...
I'm not playing, normally I've got the headphones on, not that anything's on, it's just noise reduction, you know.
And it just allows me... And so what happens is they prioritise what they want to talk to me about, because I'm always available, mm-hmm. but I don't get to know, you know, their views on last night's television.
Well, I love Richard Branson. One of my favourite quotes from him is, if you're not in business to help people, you shouldn't be in business. I think that applies to you guys too.
Totally.
We'll take that. So thanks, Richard. Mindset minutes, life hacks. So.
Beautiful.
But I did word Emily up. Did you know?
Yes.
I said, Ben usually comes really well prepared for these, and he's disappointed today that I've subbed him.
Oh, because I had some fantastic... Well, I mean, look at what I had ready.
So, mate, you're on the bench. You can set that over for next week. But you've got some interesting, did you know, stats around health.
Yeah. Well, these are the stats that I learned. There was about five, but I'm just going to touch on three today. So these are what I learned. And these used to be, when you opened my website, they were on the front. This is why I started the business, because it just shocked me so much. But 1 in 2 Australians will have cancer in their lifetime, if that doesn't make you want to get out and exercise and eat better. 60% of Australians... 80% of Australians are now obese. Mm-hmm. So we definitely need to change what we're doing. And then 60% of deaths in Australia are diet related.
Mm.
And this is where my mission came from. 60% of deaths in Australia are diet related. And that means they're preventable. You know, it's little things that we can do.
You are what you eat.
You are what you eat. And, clearly, often people just wonder, you know, if they hear the big C word, you know, cancer, it's frightening, it's mysterious. But when you break it down, it's just one cell in your body that's died, and then it's affected another cell and then it just grows. And so really all it's about is keeping your cells healthy. And so really it's about, you know, the philosophy that you're talking about. For me, on the obesity, and I may be on my own here, but I think the single, if for people who have got the standard Australian diet or the SAD diet, where they eat a lot of processed food and they let companies...
I haven't heard that. That's great. The SAD diet.
They let companies feed them. I don't mind a company like Serotonin feeding me because I know what's coming, but I don't let someone feed me from a packet.
Yeah. You should always use bags, not barcodes in the supermarket. Fill up your bags with produce. Don't buy things with barcodes.
We could go all day by the sounds of all this. So the number one thing I think that people should do is go make their house gluten-free, right?
Yeah.
Because... Some of the changes that, you know, if you were proposing...
I did a great post about it yesterday. Still on the Instagram.
Well, plant-based, that's a big change. For me to say paleo, that's a big change. Yeah. If you want to go vegan or vegetarian, they're all big changes. But you can actually make your household gluten-free really easily. Gluten-free tomato sauce, gluten-free mayonnaise, gluten-free soy sauce, gluten-free lollies, gluten-free... And with a very minimal impact on your palate.
Yeah.
And if you can sustain it, that's...
Your skin will change, your body shape will change.
And the obesity, just that obesity one, because I think wheat is the great Australian, world obesogenogen. So there's my life. There you go. I just threw another one. But
and that was the best ever did you know, by the way. I was waiting for that, Bryce.
Yeah.
That was a return to...
Oh, that did you know was off the charts, mate. That wasn't even in the same sort of stratosphere. But good did you knows, and I think it's really important. And it keeps in the theme of what we've been talking about.
And people don't know them, so.
No, I agree. I agree. So,
well, we talk about that. We've got ABCD, Asset Selection, Borrowing Power, Cash Flow Management, Defence.
Mm-hmm.
Defence is about protecting your income so you can actually continue to build your wealth base.
Yeah.
Right. So, and everything is about, defence is about income protection, life, trauma, TPD.
If you cost out cancer.
1 in 2, someone's going to get it. So it's an asset. Like, you don't want to ever call on it. I always say insurances is like an asset you never want to call on. They spend all their time insuring their cars and their houses. Now, the chances of your house burning down, it's not one in two. The chances of getting cancer are one in two. So, you know.
Great way to put it.
Yeah. So let's finish on this, folks. Health is real wealth.
Health is real wealth.
So there we go. But it's been a pleasure having you on, Emily. Thanks for taking the time to come out here while you've been searching for sites in North Melbourne for your next restaurant. Yeah. And, mate, as always, it's a pleasure hanging out with you on the couch. And until next week.
Knowledge is empowering, but only if you act on it.
There you go. See you next week, folks.
Cheers.
Thank you.